Nod House is the title of the book, and at one moment in the book, the narrator looked out the Nod House, looked into each face, and then in italics, we'd see what face was only front for. And then later on that page, soul is described as a certain bareness. And, you know, I get this notion, and perhaps one interpretation, is the Nod House is that place in purgatory where you're waiting for that Nod to incarnate again. And once you get the Nod, you're a human again, and you forget about all that happened on one sense. In another sense, you have some kind of access to it that's maybe not that articulate. There's just two more notions I want to get to this time. And, I think about the notion of Mu, that lost continent. You read the Wikipedia definition, and of course it never existed. It's just mythic. With Wikipedia and the materialist mindset, which we're still dealing with, you have to take those kinds of things with a grain of salt. You have to be a conscious, in the wake of the information age, you have to be a real conscious person. You really have to be media literate. And I myself believe that we've had these previous worlds. Maybe it was pre-pole shift. Maybe the pole shift was the planet's effort to get rid of us humans for a while so that it could heal. And maybe we're getting close to that point again. And human history is filled with examples of endless violent occupations, the rich squeezing out every last penny out of the poor. But environmental degradation that affects planetary climate systems, genetically modified food foisted on an unknowing public, nuclear radiation deadening large swaths of the sea, and other man-made catastrophes are really getting quite intense here as we lunge for the Mayan finish line in December. So, can you talk about how that Mu and Lemuria and the previous civilizations inspire you or inform this work?
Well, yeah, I mean, all the stuff that you're talking about, we live in apocalyptic times, and maybe all times are apocalyptic. Certainly, we have testimony from, down through the ages of, people who, have felt that they were in apocalyptic times, and pointed to the various forms of evidence that they had, in the ages that they lived in. Mu and it's cousins, Atlantis, Lemuria. I mean, they're omens. They're warnings. They're warnings of as are the Undumbulu. The Undumbulu are a failed form of human being that did not survive. That were and now survive in this stunted form underground in Dogon cosmology. So. Over the years, it's kind of struck me and kind of been a haunting fact for me that these two serial poems that have taken over my work have to do with this rather ominous material. The song of the Undumbulu, a funeral song, and the Mu resonant with lost continents, sunken continents, that could be a picture of the future, certainly a believable of the future, and maybe it is cyclical, and maybe these things are the baths of rebirth that will that have to be undergone before new continents, new formations can arise. But there's a strong apocalyptic strain running through through the writing I've been doing. I remember sending Septet for the End of Time. That set of poems that I wrote in the early 80s to Wilson Harris, the Guyanese critic and novelist, whose work I've written about it, and I published him in Hambone, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He used the phrase in talking about the set of poems that struck me and stayed with me. He talked about them intoning the funeral of an age, and that sense of an age coming to an end, that sense of trial and tribulation. Necessary trial and tribulation, on these various fronts that you talk about. I mean, the ongoing endless war that's plural and it's manifestation geographically and temporally, and the degradation of the planet and the atmosphere, the wiping out of species, the momentum towards, wiping out ourselves. All these things, inflect inflect the word, but there was something about, there was something that seemed appropriate about those two titles, about those two works. I mean, there was something I heard in that Dogon song, and there was something I heard in that music, and there was something that the whole proposition of continents being lost and perhaps rearising in other forms, you know, that still stays with me, and Nathaus is certainly, you know, a further articulation of that.
Maybe the next cataclysmic flood will take out all the red states. all right, that's just kind of a joke.
Remember that Nod is that land that Abel, that desert that Abel wanders in, you know, after killing Abel, that Cain wanders in after killing Abel. You know, that was a kind of overtone that I heard in that title as well.
Uh-huh. You know, many would suggest that what the Mayans were after was not the end of time, but an end to one way of seeing time and a yet-to-be world available to us. Do you have a sense that we are at a historical time where that kind of world is possible? That this is the dark before the dawn, an age that has more justice, real freedom, and sustainability to it? I mean, I read lines like, on page 40 in the poem Blue Annuncia's Bird Lute, where the line goes, "Yet to be world on the tips of their tongues."
The purgatorial or provisional quality of the work is aimed at some sense that, you know, that something new can come of crisis. Something new and necessary. You know, that the crisis itself is a revelation of the limitations of, you know, a particular mindset, a particular way of seeing and doing things. Crisis is an occasion for critical reevaluation and the finding of new ways. And the sense that you put forth, I think, is very much the sense that, you know, informs, you know, the possibility of hope. And, you know, I don't think I would be writing if I didn't think there were that possibility. I don't know quite what I would be doing.
You'd be living in a bunker. You'd be getting cans of baked beans in your bunker.
Yeah, and there are people doing that.
And they live in Idaho. you know, as a matter of fact, I heard a thing on NPR where a real estate guy specializes in survivalists.
That's sort of like, it's all going to blow, and I want to be one of the people who survive it. If it's all going to blow, I just think I'm more interested in a more collective survival or revival than that. I'm not so interested in, you know, making sure that, increasing my chances of individual survival. So, and that's, I think that's what the crisis has to bring us to, some way in which, you know, we can all, or at least, you know, most of us or future generations can come through and not just, you know, sit up on some hill, you know, and wait to shoot down people, you know, who are coming to enlist your help, you know, when things hit the fan. So, you know, there is that glimmer of hope, and I think that one even writes it all, however dark, you know, the passages that, you know, the writing leads you through may be. You know, I think that, there is some hope that by looking at the dark, by looking into the dark, not evading it, we can work our way through it.
From your lips to God's ear, Nate Mackey.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Well,
there's a piece in the forthcoming issue of Hambone by Nathaniel Tarn that touches on this whole business of poetry and hope, and, you know, especially in dark apocalyptic terminalist times, that I was excited to see. It's a lecture that he gave at the University of Chicago a couple months or so ago now. Anyway, it will be in Hambone number 20, which is coming.
That sounds like an edition one should buy 5 copies of and give away as gifts. Well, just a delight to get into this depth with your work. It's, you know, it's really an honor and a privilege, and I'm delighted to have it. So thanks very much, Nate.
Well, thank you for inviting me to have this conversation. I always like talking to you since we met. What's it been, a year or so ago now?
A little over a year. Yeah, it was March of 11.